Ezra, Dave, and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
One:30 in the afternoon, halfway through the Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Manuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program former Winnipeg Jets forward, version 1.0 of the Winnipeg Jets, of course. Number 36, but number one in our hearts, Mike Eagles. Mike, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
Well, good afternoon, and thanks so much for having me.
Our pleasure to have you on, Mike. Obviously, we have you on as you're going to be in town next weekend as part of the alumni game in the Heritage Classic. You know, take us back to, you know, when you got the call from Dale Hawerchuk, or when you heard about the announcement that the game was going to be taking place. You know, was that something where, you know, you saw it or you heard about the announcement, you're like, I need to get there, I want to be a part of that historic or remembrance of the Winnipeg Jets?
That's pretty much it. I think it was sometime, and I don't know when the first announcement was made. I think it was March, or maybe sometime in March, I heard about that the game was going to happen, and I was like, oh, that would be so awesome to be part of. So anyway, I did send out a feeler and then just waited and got the call in June and was thrilled to be asked to be part of it.
So, Mike, you were known to not be afraid to drop the gloves when you played for the Winnipeg Jets or any other team for that matter in the NHL. And you look over at that Edmonton Oilers roster, and they happened to have a guy who was known for dropping the gloves when Wayne Gretzky played, Dave Semenko. So I think right off the first whistle, are you going to be dropping the gloves with Semenko?
Someone said, well, are you going to hit Gretzky? And I'm like, no, Semenko's playing. Not a chance. But anyway, no, it's all in good fun. I'm sure it'll be a great game. And, you know, I don't know. I've never been part of a game like this before. I honestly don't know what the tempo is going to be like or what the competitiveness is going to be like, or it's just going to be, a friendly. I'm not really sure. I guess in some ways I'm really looking forward to it, and, you know, I'm sure the competitive juices may start flowing a little bit as the game wears on.
Mike, you played in Winnipeg for parts of 5 seasons. What did it mean to you when you first heard the team was coming back?
Oh, I mean, I was absolutely thrilled that the team was coming back to Winnipeg. We loved our time there. My second son, Chris, was born in Winnipeg. It's always had a very special place in our hearts. And, of course, we were super excited when the Jets were coming back to town.
When you heard Mike Eagles is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, of course, he'll be in town next weekend as part of the alumni game at the Heritage Classic. When you heard about the game occurring, did you sort of put out a feeler to Dale Hawerchuk saying, you know, that you'd like to be a member of the team? How did you sort of make it known to the powers that be that you were willing to get on a plane and come back to Winnipeg and skate at Investors Group Field?
I just sent a note to the administration at the Jets, and I think they passed it on to Dale. I mean, I got a note back saying Dale was putting the team together, and that they sent my message on. So I mean, that's kind of how that went. And I didn't play with Dale.
Right.
I mean, he's the same age as I am. We played against each other a long time, but I know I've met him a couple of times. But I was unsure, and you know, of course, like I said, I'm absolutely thrilled that he asked me to play, to be part of it.
Mike, do you have any idea what type of line mates you're going to have next Saturday for the alumni? Are you going to be on that first line with Timo, or are you going to maybe be on that fourth line grind line with Darren Shannon?
When they first announced the roster on TSN, they had me on the second line, which was the first time ever in my hockey career. So I have no idea, you know, really, to be honest with you. I'm looking forward to it. I think we're skating on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure they'll put some lines together. I would suspect that I'll be on down the roster a little bit, but anyway, I'm like I said, I'm just happy to be there. so to speak.
Mike, how much preparation have you been doing in New Brunswick? Like, have you been doing a lot of battle drills in preparation for this game, or just doing a little skating?
Not so much battle drills, but I have skated. I don't play hockey. I haven't really played at all since I retired. The odd game here every couple of years. So I did commit to skating with we have a women's hockey team at the university that I'm the athletic director at St. Thomas University. And so I've been skating on a fairly regular basis with our women's hockey team. And they haven't been cutting me any slack. So they've been pushing me, and it's been a lot of fun. Just practicing, it's been, I miss practice. I can't tell you. It's really odd. I really enjoy the time that I'm getting out there to skate and do the drills and stuff. So it's been a lot of fun.
Mike, take us back to those early 90s Jets. What was one of your, favorite memories, or maybe a favorite goal you scored, or just anything that our listeners would like to hear from you on that?
Well, I could probably tell you every goal I did score with Winnipeg. I don't know if I have a favorite goal, but I think one of the most exciting times was obviously Tamu's first year, the year that he put together, and that was really exciting. And when he set the record, beating Bossy's record or whatever, was pretty exciting night. And I enjoyed. And then aside from that, I think the playoff atmosphere that was created in the arena when we played the 2 years that played against Vancouver. Being in that atmosphere was something I'll remember forever. It was pretty awesome.
Mike Eagle's our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I was going to ask you, of course, about those two back-to-back years, those playoff series against the Canucks.
Disappointments too, weren't they?
Yeah, they're still disappointing. The fans still can probably vividly remember them. Let's start with the 92 series. The Jets were the underdog, the clear underdog coming into that playoff series, but you come out and we get that 3-1 lead over the Canucks after four games, and the upset, you can almost taste the upset. The next three games, Vancouver, they handle them very easily. 8-2, 8-3, and 5-0. What changed between, say, games, for game 5, 6, and 7 back in 92 Vancouver?
Obviously they had a real good team, and we were a bit more like that year. We had more of a grinding style team, and I don't know. We played hockey to perfection, I think, in the first four games. But they obviously turned it up. They had a real good team, and I'd say we'd still be scratching our heads a little bit in terms of why we weren't able to finish them off in terms of both years, really. But it's you got to give a lot of credit to Vancouver at that time. I mean, obviously we were doing our best not to let that happen, but they found a way to, counter what we did in the first four games.
Mike, what's your plan personally for getting into town before Saturday's game? Are you going to be able to bring your whole family to experience the entire weekend?
Yeah, most of my family is coming, and actually I'm coming in on Wednesday, so I'll be there for the game on Wednesday night, and then I'm staying right through till Monday. So I wanted to, take advantage of all the activities and really have a great visit. And so I'm really looking forward to being there. And, yeah, I do have quite a bit of family coming with me. And so it's, special for them as well.
Are you still connected to a lot of the guys that you played with those early Jets?
Honestly, I don't communicate, certainly on a regular basis with some of the guys or with, a lot of the guys. I mean, over the years, I've stayed in touch with Gord Donnelly a little bit and Mark Osborne, and it'd be the two guys that probably from the Winnipeg days that I have talked to the most over the years. But, so I'm really looking forward to seeing some of the other guys that I have not stayed connected with and catching up with those guys.
Mike Eagle's our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mike, of course, a former member of the Winnipeg Jets 1.0. He'll be in town next weekend as part of the alumni game at the Heritage Classic. Mike, 1993, Game 6 against the Canucks, overtime, Greg Adams' goal. How did it count? I mean, how was it not disallowed? I mean, I'm watching the YouTube clip of it here in studio again. I remember vividly being at the arena saying, well, that goal can't possibly count. The player plowed through Bob Esenza and then kicked it in. How did it count?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. It's you'd like to turn back the clock sometimes, but it is, you know, you gotta maybe today there'd be a coach's challenge.
Exactly, there'd be a coach's challenge. But I mean, you know, if you remember, obviously it's been a number of years, but do you remember, you know, going back into the dressing room after that goal was scored? You guys were eliminated from the playoffs on a very controversial goal. You know, what was it like being in that dressing room after that goal was scored?
Well, I think it's tough. Anytime, like the playoffs or, you know, and trying to win a Stanley Cup is what you're, you know, when you get into the playoffs, that's really your only goal. And I think anytime you lose, no matter how you lose, it is tough. I mean, obviously, I never won a Stanley Cup. It's one of the things that we all dreamed about when we were kids. And I was managed to win a couple championships along the way, you know, before I got into the NHL. Sure. And it's such a thrill, and to come up short, it's tough. No matter how it happens, I think it's tough.
Back-to-back champion, Memorial Cup champions with the Kitchener Rangers, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
Well, yeah, no, we weren't back-to-back. Okay. Actually, Dale Hawerchuk's team in 81 beat us in Windsor.
Okay.
So he was playing for Cornwall, and then in 82 we beat Sherbrooke in the finals. So, yeah, we had some pretty good teams, but, you know, winning is what, you know, at that level, winning is what it's all about.
Mike, you mentioned that you're currently the athletic director for St. Thomas University in New Brunswick. You also did some coaching there. What was that like to transition from having a long career in professional hockey in the NHL to a coach?
Well, I tell you, I love the coaching. And so I retired and came back to Fredericton, and which was a great fit for us. My wife is from here. And about a year and a half after, well, almost 2 years after I retired, I got the job at St. Thomas coaching the men's hockey team. And, you know, it's if you're not playing, it's the next best thing is coaching. I loved coaching. I coached for 9 years, and I eventually did both jobs, athletic director and coach, and then eventually I went to athletic director only. And unfortunately now the team, the program was canceled last spring, so it's disappointing for me that, you know, because I've had obviously a lot at stake with that program and put a lot of time and effort in. It was unfortunate, but it's one of those things. It's the economics of the game. You know, well, of course, we went through it in Winnipeg, or the city went through it at the time, so unfortunate. But I love coaching, and, you know, who knows down the road.
Mike Eagle's our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mike, we'll let you go on this last question. You know, you're from New Brunswick, so it's obviously good to be, you know, quote unquote, back home where you're the athletic director. You know, what was it like to sort of get your start in the NHL and get noticed coming out of, you know, Sussex, New Brunswick? That's where you were born. You know, the sort of out far east in Canada, not the same, maybe opportunities available as there would be in central Canada or in Ontario. So did you find that, you know, you had to, you know, maybe try harder or be a little bit more noticeable, not try harder, but, you know, have to make yourself a little bit more aware to people to come out of a place like New Brunswick?
Well, to be honest with you, I mean, my opportunities, you know, to get into hockey at the highest level really didn't come from New Brunswick. So when I was about 16 years old, there was a guy running a hockey school in my hometown, and he was coaching in the Western Hockey League. And it just by chance, he said, well, Mike, he brought me and my best friend out to Billings, Montana for a training camp with the Billings Bighorns in the Western Hockey League. And I spent my first year away from home in Melville, Saskatchewan. So I think you're right. At the time, there was really no major junior teams in the East. And so hockey at the highest level seemed very distant to us. Not so much anymore now with the major junior teams there, but it was a dream only. And to have the opportunity to move away from home and then start playing junior A out west and a little bit of major junior A, it gave me the opportunity. Boy, you know what? I can play with these guys, and I started to get confidence that maybe I could have a career in hockey, even though as a youngster I always dreamed of it. But didn't really understand that it might be a possibility till I moved away from home in 1979 to go out west.
And of course, Mike, we remember, Jets fans of a certain vintage remember that our AHL team was in Moncton, the Moncton Hawks, for a number of years,
right.
Were the AHL affiliate of the Winnipeg Jets. So it'll be great next Saturday to have another little bit of New Brunswick tying back to the Winnipeg Jets organization.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, I can tell you that.
Mike, we really appreciate your time this afternoon. Thanks very much for doing this, and we'll see you in the Peg next Saturday, or I guess next Wednesday. We'll see you at the game.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Terrific, Mike. Thanks so much for joining us.
All the best. Thanks, bye.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Nylander moving in. Puts it across in front. He scores! Matthews!
Here is McDavid. McDavid trying to split the defense. McDavid, what a play! What a goal! Oh my! Connor McDavid, welcome back!
Auston Matthews and Connor McDavid putting on a show on the NHL's opening night this past Wednesday. Matthews with, of course, four goals in his first ever NHL game. Connor McDavid, 6 points already in two games as the Oilers won last night in Calgary as
well. Did you see the breakaway goal that he scored?
I did.
Incredible.
Oh, I mean, there's just no goaltending. I mean, Brian Elliott's got to be, you know, Brian Elliott, he's come to Calgary to shore up their goaltending position. And his first two games are against the Oilers and Connor McDavid. And, I mean, there's no goaltender in the league who could have stopped that breakaway. He could have stopped the penalty shot, never mind on Wednesday. And then the breakaway at full speed, it's just unfair.
By the way, Drew, for a team like the Calgary Flames, that you talk about how good they are defensively, they've given up 12 goals in two games.
I don't think they're that good defensively. I think that...
Well, they're very good. They're supposed to be good
defensively.
They're
supposed to be, but they're not. I mean, we saw last year the problem was with the goaltending. And that's why they bring Brian Elliott in.
They miss a guy like Chris Russell.
Well, you know, Dougie Hamilton has never turned into be anything much of a defenseman.
He's a pretty solid defenseman, but...
Yeah, he's not based on his draft position. They expect a lot more.
Think the Jets would like to have Dougie Hamilton on their team?
Look, that's not saying anything given the Jets' defensive woes in their bottom three of their defense. They could use Dougie Hamilton, but he's a good offensive defenseman, but his defensive zone game leaves a lot to be desired. Regardless, though, Brian Elliott, he's got to be sitting there saying, thank God I'm not going to see Connor McDavid for a little while at this point in time, because the show that Connor McDavid is putting on is just absolutely incredible.
Well, when I tweeted out the night before the NHL regular season started that I thought Connor McDavid was going to win the Art Ross and the Hart Trophy, everybody said I was crazy.
No, I think he'll win the Art Ross. I agree with you.
Well, a lot of people didn't think he was going to win the Art Ross or the Hart, and he's got 6 points in two games, Drew. And regardless if he wins the Art Ross or the Hart Trophy, he's certainly going to be top three, top five in the league in scoring. I mean, this guy, he might only be 19 years old, but as far as I'm concerned, he might already be the best offensive player in the league.
Well, we were talking about the show and, you know, trying to figure out, you know, making a plan for today's show. You said, you know, there's a question to be asked. Is Connor McDavid the best player in the NHL already? Two games into his second season. And I'm not sure I'm prepared to go that far and say he's the best player, you know, no questions asked, but he's certainly top two or top three in that discussion, I would think.
I will say this. He is worth whatever you're paying to go to a game. He alone, Connor McDavid specifically, I mean, Auston Matthews is an excellent player and his four goals were phenomenal, but Connor McDavid is just a joy to watch. Like, if you enjoy watching hockey, you know, regardless of whether you want to watch, if you're going to watch a lot of Oilers games, he really makes you want to turn the television on just to see what he could do with that puck.
That's why, you know, from my perspective, it's not a shame, because that would be a little too far, but it's a little bit unfortunate that the Oilers are the Jets' opponent for this outdoor game next week, because I'd rather see Connor McDavid in a, let's call it a true NHL setting, like in an actual arena, as opposed to ice that might be a little bit more questionable in an outdoor game, because you're only going to see him through town either once or twice on some years. Now, fortunately, the Oilers will be back in Winnipeg, I believe it's in December, so you'll be able to see him again at the MTS Center. But Connor McDavid, you're absolutely right, Dave, to your point, is one of those rare players who is absolutely worth the price of admission, because what he does at top speed, very, very few players in the NHL have, in the NHL's history, have ever been able to do.
And so is Auston Matthews, guys. Like, I was watching that game live, and that second goal that Auston Matthews scored when he steals the puck from Erik Karlsson, I mean, that might have been the nicest goal I've seen in 5 years. I mean, really, like, this guy is just as good as advertised. And when you're talking about Connor McDavid and Auston Matthews, I told this to Dave, and you could throw in, I mean, Patrick Laine and Jack Eichel, I think, are a step below. But I told this to Dave. When you're talking about Connor McDavid and Auston Matthews, I don't think the NHL has seen talent like this since Sidney Crosby and Alexander Ovechkin in 2004 and 5. And I think by the time these guys are done, they might be better than Ovechkin and Crosby. Back to your original question, though, Drew, because I gave some thought to this, and I still think the two best overall players in the league are Sidney Crosby and Jonathan Toews. So I think when you're talking about best overall players, I don't think Connor McDavid is there yet. But when you're talking about offensive talent, I think at 19 years old, guys, he might be just as talented as any other guy. And that's throwing in Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin and Patrick Kane. What this guy can do at top speeds, I think, like I said, I think by the time he's done, he might have better offensive numbers than Crosby. Because when Crosby first came into the league and had the 120-point season and everything like that, I mean, the guy was like a bullet. But when you're talking about Connor McDavid, I think he might end up being better.
Well, let me ask you this. You mentioned Auston Matthews, and obviously it was an incredible Wednesday night for the kid, you know, getting four goals and full marks to him for that. But realistically, how many goals can you expect Auston Matthews to score this season in the NHL? I mean, NHL rookies...
I'd probably say 400.
NHL rookies don't score more than 30 goals in a season.
Well, hold on. I would say traditional.
In the last 5 years or the last decade, NHL rookies don't score more than 30 goals in the NHL. They just don't. I mean, last year, you know, Panarin, who was not what I would describe as a traditional rookie,
yeah,
led all rookies with 30 goals. Jack Eichel was second with 24. Now, McDavid would have been fine if he was healthy. He probably would have had more. But, I mean, but you go back, you know. The
last guy to score 50 goals in a season was Ovechkin in 2005.
I'm just talking about rookies. I'm just talking about rookies now. I mean, you know, you look back year over year over the last, you know, 5-7 years, rookies just don't score more than 30 goals. So it'd be...
Well, that's what I'm saying. But Ovechkin was the last guy.
Right, but he didn't score 50 in his rookie season.
Yes, he did.
Did
he? What are you asking, though?
I'm just saying, how many...
Ovechkin scored 52 goals in his rookie year.
Okay, well, there you go. So is Auston Matthews going to score 40 goals this year? Is that a realistic number for him?
Yeah.
I think
he could hit 40.
Yeah.
You think he's that special of a talent?
We've been to the drafts now, every one except for the Pittsburgh one. And when you're on the bus and you're talking and you're interacting with scouts and you're hearing them talk, you hear the way they talk about certain drafts and you talk about the level of, you know, this player is an A+, this person's an A, this person's a B, and how many are in each draft. Generational type players. Auston Matthews is one of those players that scouts elevated to that next level, yep, as obviously with Connor McDavid. So, I mean, I don't think you can put him into and I'm not trying to slag Neil Yakupov, but I'm not saying, like, that's not the same level that these guys are, as Ezra said, they're next level. These guys are that next level. So I don't think you can put a limitation and say, well, he's only going to get 30 goals. And even though he got four in his first, it can't continue. I don't know why it can't continue.
Well, guys, he scored four goals in his first game. And, Drew, he's obviously not going to score four goals every night. He's not going to actually score whatever he's on pace for, 320 goals,
yeah,
or whatever ridiculous number it is, right? But I think, you know, with a guy like Auston Matthews, if he scores 30 goals, that's almost a disappointment. So, I mean, I can't say with absolute confidence that he's going to score 40 goals because he's going to go through periods of time during the regular season where he struggles a little bit. But I do think he could hit 40 goals. If you're asking me, you know, if that's possible, yes. I think if you said 50, that's a little bit unrealistic. But 40, certainly. And the Toronto Maple Leafs, guys, let's be honest, they're not going to be very good this year. They had six rookies in their lineup to start the season against Ottawa. And guys like Mitch Marner and William Nylander are phenomenal talents. But that team is not going to be a playoff team, in my opinion. They're going to be exciting to watch. So, I mean, it's a great time to be a hockey fan, guys, with guys like Auston Matthews and Connor McDavid, Patrick Laine, Jack Eichel might be injured right now. But, you know, we haven't seen this type of talent in the NHL in 10 years, so it's great to watch.
Want to remind you that if you're in the area of CF Polo Park, head down to Center Court there and show people your new iHeartRadio app to enter for a chance to win some great prizes, including a grand pair prize of tickets to next weekend's Heritage Classic hockey game at IG Field. Just download the app, show it to the team, the 1290 team, the Bell Media team that is down there at CF Polo Park. Show them that you have the free iHeartRadio app on your phone, and you're eligible to win prizes. So do that if you're in the area of CF Polo Park. Check out for the big interactive display and the freebies being handed out right now.
And obviously, tell them that you iHeart Illegal Curve too, Drew. Come on.
That's exactly what you should say. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Boston Bruins. They'll be in town on Monday to face the Jets. Joe Haggerty of CSNNewEngland.com joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, hour number three, up next on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuke with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program Joe Haggerty. Joe covers the Boston Bruins for CSNNE.com. Joe, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, always a pleasure. How are you guys doing today?
Doing very well, Joe. How about yourself?
Excellent. Here in the hub of the NHL, Toronto, getting ready hockey night in Canada tonight. And, oh, by the way, Austin Matthews making his home ice debut, so it should be pretty fun.
Have they changed the name of the city yet to Austin as opposed to Toronto?
You know, they haven't, because I think they're also completely overwhelmed and upside down in Blue Jays mania right now, too, with the baseball playoffs going on. So I think there's like equal parts Austin Matthews mania and equal parts Blue Jays craziness going on. And once the Blue Jays, for better or worse, their season is over, then it's fully on for Austin and Toronto.
Joe, we obviously brought you on to talk about the Boston Bruins, and they're going to be in town to play the Jets coming up on Monday night. I want to start with Brad Marchand. I mean, he had a great season last year, you know, where he sort of had, you know, a career high in points with 61, you know, 37 goals, which shattered his previous career high of 28. And then he picks up where he left off, getting that 5-point night last, to open the season for the Bruins. Is there, you know, we know that Marchand's a great player. We know he signed the big contract extension. We know he was a key member of Team Canada at the World Cup. You know, is there more of Brad Marchand that we still haven't seen? Is the best still to come for him?
Yeah, I think he's hitting the highest notes of his career right now. You know, he's in the prime of his NHL career. I think he's fully confident in his abilities, and he's taken it to the next level. I mean, I can tell you, there are times last year, obviously he scored 37 goals, so we had a great season. And there were times last year where he did some amazing things in clutch moments to help the Bruins win games. And you could see sort of the progression going, you know, from a good player to a player that was trending towards elite. But what I saw in that game against Columbus on Thursday night was, from the second period on, a player that took over the game, decided his team wasn't going to lose, and impacted the game every single shift he was on the ice, and did it without Patrice Bergeron, who was out of the lineup, obviously, with an injury and won't play tonight in Toronto either, and was able to do that by himself. And you only see the star players in the NHL able to take over games like that and really enforce their will on the opponent and dominate to that level. And he was able to do it en route to 5 points and his line scoring all 6 goals and a comeback from a 2-0 deficit at the end of the first period. So I do think we're now seeing him at the very height of his powers and going from a really good player to a star player. And it's a credit to him that he's been able to do that. Right? Mike Babcock talked about him in terms of being a star this morning after the morning skate in Toronto. and even made a comparison watching him the other night in Columbus to what he sees Patrick Kane do on the ice. So that's a pretty lofty comparison from one of the best coaches in the NHL.
Joe, sticking with that top line there, that top line of Brad Marchand, David Backes, and David Pasternak. David Pasternak's a guy, to me, every time I watch him play, it's abundant how much skill the guy has. He's yet to play a full season with the Boston Bruins. He played 51 games last year. Is it safe to say that the expectations are much higher for David Pasternak during this season?
I think so. 20 years old, entering his third NHL season. This is when a lot of players like Pasternak really, you know, explode and break out and show exactly who they're going to be at the NHL level. And for him, he put in a lot of work over the summer, working out and gaining a little bit more weight and strength. And he's up close to 190 pounds now, which is much bigger than he was in the past. And I think you could see in the preseason and in that game the other night in Columbus, it's noticeable that he's going to different areas of the ice than he did before. He's winning more battles where he comes out with the puck than he did before. And you add that to the skill level that he has, and he's starting to gain the confidence of the coaching staff in different situations and really starting to become more of an impact player in different areas rather than just simply relying on his speed and a little bit of skill there to get his points. And I do believe that when the season comes to an end here, we're going to see David Pasternak having put up big numbers and really sort of morphing into the player that people believed he could be the last couple of years. And, you know, people forget he's only 20 years old. He was the youngest player in the NHL a couple of years ago. So I think he's right on track for where he's supposed to be. And once Bergeron comes back, that Marchand-Bergeron-Pasternak line is going to be an absolute nightmare for opponents at both ends of the ice.
Joe, since the NHL draft, there were rumors swirling about Jacob Trouba and whether the Bruins would offer him, make an offer sheet for him. And now, you know, there's been a lot of articles that you yourself have written about whether he was worth the cost for the Boston Bruins to acquire. Do you still think Jacob Trouba is in the Boston Bruins' plan?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if the price is right, if they can find a way to make a match, and that includes even a third team, where I think that the from what I had heard and from what some of the speculation is, and I know Elliot Friedman wrote about this too, it seems like the only possibility or the easiest possibility for the Bruins to get it done would be to involve another team, get a left side defenseman from that team, and then move that plus other pieces to Winnipeg to get Jacob Trouba. It seems like that's what Kevin Chevalier wants, at least from, you know, people I've talked to and the reports that I've seen, that he wants, you know, a left side defenseman of the same stature of Jacob Trouba. And I don't think that Torrey Krug rises to those standards in the eyes of Chevalier and the Jets, and that's rightfully so. I think Krug is more a bottom pairing power play specialist on a good team and not a top four guy on a good team. So I think he is definitely in the conversation, but I think there are other defensemen out there that could potentially be in the conversation with the Bruins as well. You know, whether it's Cam Fowler, whether it's Kevin Shattenkirk. And the other part of this whole equation for the Bruins is, how are the young players that they have developing? They've got a guy in the lineup right now, 19-year-old Brandon Carlo, who was a second-round pick a couple of years ago. He's played 8 games in the AHL in his career and then was Zdeno Chara's partner opening night in Columbus. Had a few mistakes early, but, you know, got better as the game was going on. Had a really impressive preseason. And if that kind of a player continues on the development path that he's on right now and can handle things at the NHL level with Zdeno Chara and keeps getting better, they really are high on him as a defenseman prospect. If a couple of young guys really develop and come through this year and contribute, I think that greatly lessens the need for a player like Jacob Trouba. You know, it's always tough and it's a dicey situation for an NHL team to rely on young defensemen if they're hoping to win in the league and, you know, not continuously take their lumps while the lessons are being learned. But they're in the development and learning process right now with these players. And if the Bruins like what they see enough with these young guys, they might not even decide to go out of the organization and get guys like Trouba. It's an interesting situation that the Bruins are in right now. But the bottom line is, whether it's the young players developing or whether it's getting somebody outside the organization, they needed to be much better on the back end than they were last year, and they're trying to find those answers right now.
Joe Haggerty is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Joe covers the Boston Bruins for CSNNE.com. The Bruins, of course, will be in Winnipeg on Monday night to meet the Jets. Joe, David Backes was a big free agent signing this past offseason, coming over from the St. Louis Blues. He's centering that line with Marchand and Pasternak. You know, how has Backes' transition been from the St. Louis Blues organization that he knew so well for so many years to a member of the Boston Bruins? Has it been sort of relatively seamless thus far? And, you know, besides, you know, off-on-ice contributions, what are the Bruins hoping to get out of David Backes?
Yeah, I think he's been high impact in all manners. You know, he's a big body, obviously, that goes to the front of the net. The Bruins have had a big problem the last couple of years with their net front presence and having somebody that could get there and could make things happen offensively when he is there. And Backes is obviously that kind of guy. A couple of the goals that were scored on Thursday night involved that exact thing, with Backes getting to the front of the net and making some things happen. So you add that to the gritty, hard-hitting element and the intensity element that he brings to the table. Clearly, he's in the Bruins' mold as far as being a physical guy, a guy that will throw his body around, a guy that will be the aggressor against opponents rather than kind of sitting back and letting things happen to him. So, you know, in all those ways, he's been a big impact player for the Bruins. And just being a guy that could step in when Patrice Bergeron's hurt and not playing and have immediate success with Brad Marchand and David Pasternak, they didn't have a player like that that could step into that kind of a role and be effective last season and, you know, hit the ground running with those two players. So, you know, all those things are really good for the Bruins. He adds that leadership quality as well. I really like the fact, from a team perspective, that he's a guy that's been around for a long time and has not won a cup, and he brings that hunger to win to a group of players that, for the most part, have won. And I think there was some of that passivity the last few years to this team where these players had been to the mountaintop before, they'd won the cup, they'd been to the finals twice, and maybe the hunger wasn't there as much as it used to be. And I think bringing a player like that into the equation brings a lot of that hunger back and that desire to win and that kind of fire. So I think these are all good things. Really, the only question about Backes, I think he's going to be an impact player for the next couple of years, and he's going to be really good for them. He can play right wing or center. He's very versatile. I just have a question what he's going to be like as a player in year four, year five of a deal where he's 32 years old right now and he's played over 800 games and he's got a lot of hard miles on him at this point in his career. So this was definitely a contract they signed for the right now, and they'll worry later about what they're going to get at the back end of the contract. But, you know, for the next couple of years, I expect him to be exactly what Bruins fans want and exactly what the Bruins needed on the ice as a player goes.
Joe, I'm sure you've gotten this question a lot early on in the season, but how much pressure is there on the Boston Bruins and head coach Claude Julien to make the playoffs this year? They didn't get into the playoffs last year, but with a veteran team, we just talked about David Backes, and when you talk about guys like Zdeno Chara, these are veteran NHLers, guys that have been in the league for many years. Sure, the Bruins do have some young players like Pasternak, and as you mentioned, to start the season, some younger defensemen, but how much pressure is there on this team to not only make the playoffs, but do something in the playoffs?
Well, I think there's definitely pressure to make the playoffs. And it's not just on Claude Julien. It's on GM Don Sweeney. It's on President Cam Neely. The ownership group's not happy that they have not made the playoffs the last 2 years, that they've collapsed at the very end of the year and missed the playoffs by a point in each of the last two seasons. So there's definitely an unhappiness about that situation and a mandate to improve it and to get back into the postseason. I know Jeremy Jacobs said on Bruins Media Day that he expects a deep run in the playoffs. I think that's kind of unreasonable with the group that they have. And that, as an expectation, is just not going to get met with this team. I just don't think they have what it takes at this point to have a long run into the postseason. Just getting in, they're going to be around the bubble either way. They've been that way the last couple of years. I think just getting in and getting a couple of home games at TD Garden and getting some of these younger players, like David Pasternak's never played in the playoffs. So getting guys like that a little playoff experience would be a really good thing. And that's what their goal should be, and that's where the pressure is right now on that team, on the coach, and on the front office. The interesting scenario with Claude Julien is that he's got an assistant coach on his staff now, Bruce Cassidy, who is the head coach in Providence, and is kind of a ready-made replacement on the staff. Yeah. if the Bruins decide they want to make a move with their head coach. And, you know, given the pressure that's on this team, given the urgency to win and get back into the postseason, I think the seat is going to get very hot for Claude Julien if the Bruins do go on an extended losing streak, or they show kind of, you know, the sort of passivity and the laissez-faire attitude that they've had at times during games over the last couple of years. So I wouldn't say the leash is going to be very long for the coach, and I think there's a lot of pressure on him. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out over the course of the season.
Joe Haggerty, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Joe covers the Bruins for CSNNewEngland.com. Joe, a couple more and then we'll let you go. You mentioned the hot seat for Claude Julien. Doesn't help to have Patrice Bergeron out of the lineup. He's not going to play tonight in Toronto. Minor injury? Is that all that the Bruins are nothing to be especially concerned about right now?
Well, they've said minor injury, but they also said minor injury a couple of years ago when David Krejci got hurt in the last game of the preseason and then ended up being in and out of the lineup for half the year while he was dealing with it. My understanding is this is something that Patrice Bergeron was dealing with the second half of last year and played through, and it's been kind of an ongoing thing. And the question will become at some point, like, you know, when does it become something that needs to be addressed? And, you know, he's out for a period of time while dealing with it, whether it's surgery or whatever else. And, you know, is it wise to continue to play through it if it's something that's, you know, going to start bothering him more and more? And it's very unclear right now how long exactly he's going to be out. And the Bruins have been vague enough on his injuries at this point that you can't really put any stock into what they say one way or the other. The greater bottom line here with the Bruins is, and you mentioned this, their core is getting older. You know, Dan Chara is going to be 40. David Krejci and Patrice Bergeron are on the wrong side of 30. Brad Marchand's approaching 30. They're players that have played a lot of hockey over the last 10 years are starting to get a little old, and there are going to start to be breakdowns like this where they're going to miss time. And that's just a part of the makeup of this team right now, and it's part of their reality. And it's part of the challenge of, you know, continuing to be a playoff team while introducing young players and holding on to the best parts of the older players that are a link to the Stanley Cup they won in 2011.
Last one for you, Joe. Louis Erickson departs Boston in the offseason. He goes to Vancouver. How do the Bruins expect to sort of fill the production that Louis Erickson gave the team last year in what was clearly his most productive season for the Bruins since coming over from Dallas for Tyler Seguin?
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, he had a great season. He scored 30 goals. He was very effective at both ends of the ice. I think David Backes is going to come in and provide some of that for sure. But I think, as I mentioned before, I think David Pastrnak is really in line for a huge breakout season. I'm talking, you know, 20 goals, 50 to 60 points, especially if he remains in a top six role and he gets power play time. Once the coaches see that he's, you know, playing the game the right way, that he's involved in the battle and engaged in all areas, that he's, you know, playing, he's back checking and doing everything and hustling and you know, playing the way Claude Julien wants him to play. When he's doing all those things, he's going to get the good opportunities. And I think the skill and the speed and, you know, everything that goes into him as a dynamic game-breaking offensive force just comes out into production. And I really think more than anybody else, that's the player that's going to jump up and fill out the numbers that might have been lost by Erickson going to Vancouver.
Joe Haggerty covers the Boston Bruins for CSNNE.com. Joe, appreciate your time this afternoon. We'll let you go. I think the Leafs pregame ceremony starts in about 10 minutes, so we'll let you get to your seat.
Yeah, I think they're going to go fast forward through the last 40 or 50 years, right? It'll be all about the old days for the Leafs ceremony, right?
Absolutely, Joe. Thanks for doing this.
You got it, guys.
Take care. Joe Haggerty covers the Bruins for CSNNE.com. When we come back, we look at the number of contract signings and key injuries throughout the NHL. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Big thanks to Joe Haggerty for joining us to talk about the Bruins. They'll be in town on Monday to face the Jets. Of course, before that, we were pleased to be joined by Dane Mizutani to preview today's Jets Wild game game you can hear live, of course, on TSN 1290 beginning at 6 p.m. Hustler and Lawless immediately following us. And Winnipeg Jets 1.0 player Mike Eagles joined us in the second hour. A great interview that, in case you missed, will be available on our website, illegalcurve.com. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. If you're looking for a great place to watch the game, Bernstein's Deli, their massive new HD TV setup with the live audio of the game, all the deli favorites you love, some cold drinks, some bevies, all available. Check them out if you're looking for a place to catch tonight's game. Bernstein's Deli, open late now for all of your hockey viewing requirements.
Yeah, I'm reliably informed that the Jets game on Thursday night was playing at Bernstein's Deli. They had the Jays game going last night, so if you want to go check out the Jets Wild game tonight, definitely head down to Bernstein's Deli and, of course, get an IC sandwich.
You got to get the IC sandwich if you're there to watch the Jets game.
And yes, Drew, I am that shameless that I'll plug that sandwich as much as I can.
Well, I mean, it's currently plugging your arteries, so you might as well plug it on air at the same time. You're going to be there tonight, I assume, as you're watching the game there. So check it out, Bernstein's Deli in the Cordon Village Mall. News and notes from around the NHL and what has been an injury-filled opening three nights.
Did you guys see what happened to our good friend Evander Kane?
He went hard into the boards and fractured three ribs. Yes. He's going to be out of the Sabres lineup for a number of weeks now. More concerning, though, all due respect to Evander and his injury, which certainly affects the Sabres and their chances and their hopes to make the playoffs, is Jack Eichel in that practice prior to the Sabres' first game. It just goes down in a heap. He gets tangled up in front of the net. Likely a high ankle sprain. He's out week to week now, and it's not going to be a few weeks. It's probably going to be closer to a month to 6 weeks because those high ankle sprains are so difficult to heal up because there's no surgery you can perform on it. It's just a matter of time and time and time. Jack Eichel out of the Sabres lineup, a huge loss to the Buffalo Sabres. They've played one game, and they're without two of their, the players they most rely upon for offensive production.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, Drew, for the Buffalo Sabres. They obviously took a small step forward last year, but that's a team that relies heavily on its younger players like Jack Eichel, so there's going to be even more pressure on guys like Ryan O'Reilly and Sam Reinhart, and a guy like Marcus Foligno has been promoted
Kyle
to the
Ocposo,
second line.
Kyle Ocposo, he was a big free agent signing, expected he was going to be playing a lot with Eichel.
Right, and that's why they went out and acquired Kyle Ocposo on the free agent market. They made it a priority to take some of the offensive pressure off of their younger players, but Evander Kane certainly had a rough offseason, let's just call it that, and he was looking to get off to a good start. So the Buffalo Sabres are one of those teams, those young teams, that really can't afford those types of injuries, unfortunately, at this early stage of the season.
No, that was a real bad injury for the Buffalo Sabres to have happen. They do sign general manager Tim Murray to a contract extension, so I suppose that's good news, but you almost wonder if it's almost already a lost season in Buffalo, and they've played one game, which is, you don't want to put the cart before the horse, but that's a bad situation for the Buffalo Sabres.
If I was a Sabres fan, I would start heading over to Brandon and seeing what Nolan Patrick looks like in a jersey, because I suspect they may have a good chance at him next year.
Yeah, it could be with these injuries. Another significant injury occurs to the Los Angeles Kings. Jonathan Quick as injured in that first game against San Jose. Apparently it's a groin injury of some severity, and it does not sound like Jonathan Quick is going to be back in the Kings lineup anytime soon. It could require surgery that could put him out of the lineup for months, according to some reports that were released yesterday. Initially, it was week to week, but if it's surgery, it's more likely 3 to 4 months for the Los Angeles Kings without Jonathan Quick. And all due respect to backup Jeff Zatkoff, the Kings rely on Jonathan Quick as much as any team in the NHL relies on their goaltender.
Right, Drew, and Jeff Zatkoff has never been a number one goaltender in the NHL, and the Kings have lost their first two games here. It's not the start that head coach Daryl Sutter wanted. And you look at the LA Kings, they had an incredible second half of the season, almost won the Pacific Division, but this is a team that can't afford to have Jonathan Quick out of the lineup. Guys, if you look at Jonathan Quick, his importance to the Kings is, I would say, akin to Carey Price's importance to the Montreal Canadiens. And
sure,
the Kings are in a much tougher division than it used to be. The San Jose Sharks have taken a step forward. The Anaheim Ducks, we know, are going to be competitive. And then you have teams like the Arizona Coyotes, Calgary Flames, and Edmonton Oilers really making a push this year to get back into the playoffs. So if Jonathan Quick is out 3 to 4 months, Drew, that's going to be a significant blow. And our good friend Ken Wiebe of the Winnipeg Sun mentioned this in his notes today. You know, maybe a team like the Kings is in the market for a goalie. It could be Andre Pavlik. You never know. I'm sure that, you know, they'd want the Jets to eat the salary. But, you know, you look at a team like the Kings, and, you know, we talked about this, if a team does have a significant injury, and Jonathan Quick is just as significant as anybody mm-hmm. as far as his impact. He had 40 wins last year.
The LA Kings are a team that's so top-heavy. It's Jonathan Quick, it's Drew Doughty, it's Anze Kopitar, and it's Jeff Carter. They're already without Marian Gaborik. He was injured in the World Cup of Hockey. He was, you know, a little bit longer in the tooth and maybe not at the same level as those other players in terms of importance. But he's certainly important to an LA Kings team that doesn't have a ton of depth. And now they lose their all-world goaltender in Jonathan Quick. You have to be wondering just how bad is it going to get for the LA Kings.
Drew, you could argue Jonathan Quick is, after Carey Price and Braden Holtby, the third best goalie in the NHL. I would certainly argue he's a top five goalie. I'd put other guys up there too. I'd probably put Corey Schneider in that class. But Jonathan Quick's importance to LA can't be understated, so it's horrible news for them.
I think the only former goalie that's going to be playing on the LA Kings that was ever a member of the Winnipeg Jets would be Peter Budaj, who's currently the backup.
That's right, Peter Budaj, briefly.
Traded for Eric Tangrady.
There you go.
Dave. Does he still have that Ned Flanders goalie mask?
Had
the Ned Flanders mask?
Maybe I'll go behind the mask with him.
If he's in town as a member of the LA Kings, you can do that. The new feature on IllegalCurve.com, where Dave talks to goaltenders about their masks and the significance of their masks. So check it out. You did one with Connor Hellebuck and Michael Hutchinson earlier in the week.
Yep.
Great interviews with both. Those are available on IllegalCurve.com. Let's head to break. When we come back, author Jeff Kerbison is going to join us. He's the author of a new book called The Hotline: How the Legendary Trio of Hull, Hedberg, and Nielsen Transformed Hockey and Led the Winnipeg Jets to Greatness. We talk to Jeff next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Shortly past 2:30 in the afternoon, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Minuk with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program author Jeff Kerbison. He has a new book out called The Hotline: How Hull, Hedberg, and Nielsen Transformed Hockey and Led the Winnipeg Jets to Greatness. Jeff, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Jeff. You know, got to start, you know, certainly a timely book, given that next week we'll see the induction of The Hotline into the inaugural, as the inaugural class of the Winnipeg Jets Hall of Fame. So is that sort of a happy coincidence? How long has the book been in the works? And what made you decide that you wanted to tackle this topic?
Well, it's a total coincidence, because I started writing it 4 years ago.
Oh, wow.
After the Free Press sent me to Sweden to cover IKEA coming here. And then I didn't know how to write a book, so you just kind of start and you keep talking to people, and then it grows and grows and grows. And then finally, when the Heritage Classic was announced, I talked to my publisher, Greg Shilliday, and he said, well, maybe we'll do it for next year then, if you're not quite ready. I said, well, why don't we just kind of pick up the pace here? And we decided to go for it. And then 3 days later, the Jets announced Hull, Hedberg, and Nielsen being put into the Hall of Fame. And you can't, the timing, I mean, it worked perfectly, but it couldn't have been a bigger fluke.
You know, Jeff, the title of the book, you know, it says it, how these three players, Hedberg, Nielsen, and Bobby Hull, how they changed hockey. And at that time, there just weren't many Europeans playing in North America. How did these guys change hockey?
Well, they were able to change hockey, I think, because They came together. So they got to, Inge Hammerstrom and Boreas Salming were in Toronto. Tommy Bourbon was in Detroit. But because Anders and Ulf and Lars-Erik Sjoberg and Kurt Larsen came together, because Anders and Ulf got to play with Bobby, they got to kind of dictate things more. You know, Salming was a big name, but it's hard to dictate things as a defenseman. You're kind of more reactive. And so they got to play this kind of possession, crisscrossing, drop passing, no dump and chasing kind of game in an era when that's all anybody did. I mean, everybody in those days played like the tabletop games you got for Christmas, up and down your wing, get your butt on the board sort of thing. And so then no one knew how to defend that. So everything that every coach knew or every player had played growing up got thrown out the window when they played the Jets. And then at the same time, because the European experiment worked so well, they kept bringing more and more players in. So the next year was Willie Lindstrom and Mats Lind and then Dan LeBrotton. And there's also Veli Pekka-Katola and Heksi Rioranta from Finland. So they opened up the pipeline of Swedes and Finns. And later on, Eastern Europeans come to North America because, there were more Swedes and Finns in Winnipeg in 76, 77, 78 than there were in all of North America. So no matter how great, you know, Gordie Howe was with Al Salvecchio and Ted Lindsay, he never had that dual-pronged impact of on the ice and off the ice. And that's what these guys had.
Jeff, one of the architects of the Oilers' success was Glenn Sather, and you had him write the foreword to your book. How did that come about?
Well, it's funny. Everybody in Winnipeg knows somebody who knows somebody, and so and all these hockey players knew somebody. You know, everyone would say, "Oh, you should call this guy. You should call that guy." And I was talking to Ted Foreman, who used to manage a lot of money for a lot of these players, and he goes, "Oh yeah, I got Sather's number." So I called Glenn up, and he answered on the first ring, and I interviewed him. And then a year later, I called him back. I thought he'd be the perfect guy, either him or Gretzky, to do the forward. And I called him back again. He remembered, and he agreed to do it, of course. And then the funny part about it was a friend of mine, I talked to Sather at his Banff home.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine runs a restaurant in Banff. And I put something on Facebook about how Sather's going to do it. And Sather walked into my friend's restaurant. And my friend said to him, "Hey, you're doing the forward for Jeff Kerbison's book on the Hotline." And Sather goes, "Yeah, they're the greatest line I ever saw. It's going to be I think he said it'll be a fantastic book, not knowing what it's going to be. But I mean, it certainly made the small world Winnipeg thing even smaller so immediately for me, which was crazy.
Author Jeff Kerbison, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The book is called The Hotline, How the Legendary Trio of Hull, Hedberg, and Nielsen Transformed Hockey and Led the Winnipeg Jets to Greatness. There's an event tomorrow afternoon at 2 p.m. at McNally Robinson where, Jeff, you're going to talk about the book and you're going to share some insights into the book. So we encourage our listeners to check that out at 2 o'clock tomorrow at McNally Robinson. Now, Jeff, in today's Winnipeg Free Press, there's an excerpt of the book, and it really takes fans back to the night of January 5th, 1978, when the Soviet Red Army team was in town, the Central Red Army, to play the Winnipeg Jets. They had previously played in Japan, a series of games that the Russians won relatively handily. But in Winnipeg, it was a different story, and the Jets were able to defeat what was really one of the most powerhouse teams in the hockey world in the late 1970s. In the excerpt, though, it talks about how sort of this game sort of has gone under the radar for anybody that wasn't in the arena or anybody that wasn't in Winnipeg to witness it. Is this sort of one of those lost classics, a lost treasure of the hockey world, this game itself from back in 1978?
It is the greatest lost treasure. I'm going to make one small correction. It wasn't the Central Red Army team they played. They played the Soviet national team, which was primarily made up of guys from the Central Red Army team, but it was added to, it was a half step up because they also had guys from Moscow Dynamo and Spartak. But largely the Red Army team, which the Montreal Canadiens had tied a year before, 3-3. But listen, Hockey Night in Canada that night showed a game between Spartak and the St. Louis Blues. And, you know, I don't suppose you know what the score was in that game.
Fill us in.
Well, the answer is who cares? Because St. Louis was one of the worst teams in the NHL. Spartak was number six in the Russian league. And so, unless you're watching CKND or you were in the Winnipeg Arena, you didn't see it. So, Hockey Night in Canada, which could have shown, you know, what ended up being one of the greatest games of all time in my mind, they've showed this other lousy game. And if you talk to guys who were in the press box, whether it's Bob Irving or Peter Young, they will say without a doubt it was absolutely beautiful hockey. The Jets played their north, south, east, west game to perfection. They forechecked like crazy. The Russians were maybe a little bit arrogant because they had beaten the Jets three times on the larger ice surface in Tokyo. But back on the Winnipeg, in the Winnipeg Arena, you know, the North American players were able to, you know, be a little bit stronger because they didn't have as much ground to cover. And yeah, they jumped up 4-0 on the greatest team in the world in a period and a half, and then they had to pull, and they had their number two goalie in. They had a guy named Alexander Sedelnikov in, and they put Tretiak in, and all of a sudden the comeback was on. But and the weird part about that game is that when they were down, the great part for the hotline was that Hull scored 3 and Nelson scored 2, and they played against the Harlamov, Petrov, Mikhailov line, and so the hotline was +5, and those guys were -5 against them. So what might have been the greatest line in the world at the time, the Petrov line, was pulled off against the hotline. And then in the dying seconds, when the Russians are down 4-3, whether they're confident or arrogant or both, they left Tretiak in the net, and then Dave Dunn carried the puck into the Russian zone, passed to Hull, and he got his hat trick. So they became the first North American team, NHL or WHA, to beat the greatest team in the world. And when everyone was saying from the year before that Red Army versus the Canadians was the greatest game of all time, sorry, a motorcycle going by me there, this was the Jets beat the superior team. They didn't tie them, and they beat them. And so, you know, it's kind of become folklore, you know, unless you were there. But it happened, so I think part of the book here, I think part of my motivation was to, you know, give credit to this team because there was that WHA-NHL rivalry and CBC wouldn't show a WHA game, to kind of give these guys credit for what they did. And I like to hope that I did, and I'll find out when some of the guys who were in that game read it. But it really was an important game, and I don't know if we realized at the time, when as Winnipeggers, that we were watching some of the greatest hockey in the world at the time.
Jeff, you mentioned earlier in the interview that during the process of writing this book was about 4 years, and I remember talking to you about the MTS Center, about 2 years ago. You were telling me about how excited you were to be writing this book. What did you learn about Bobby Hull, Ulf Nielsen, and Anders Hedberg that you didn't know while writing this book?
Well, I guess I didn't know. I didn't really have an idea of how well these guys were respected by everybody. Because whenever I would call anybody about this book or I'd email somebody, you know, oftentimes you guys know it, when you talk to an athlete, you get all the 110% kind of cliche stuff. And you ask about Bobby Ulf and Anders, and people go, like, they slow down and they say, this one night in whatever city, and they'll tell you a great story. You know, for example, I was talking to Mike Liut about something totally different, and I mentioned, oh, he used to play in the WHA. He played for the Cincinnati Stingers, and he told me the time about how he came out as a rookie goaltender, 1977, and he was a little nervous. He's playing the hotline for the first time in Winnipeg, and Hedberg, Nielsen, Hull came out for the first shift, and they scored tic-tac-toe in the first 30 seconds. And then the Stingers took a penalty. And then the hotline stays out, and Kent Nielsen and Lars-Erik Sjoberg are on the point. And he said the puck went around the perimeter like 7 times in a matter of seconds. They scored again. And he looked up at the scoreboard, and it was 2-0, and it was a minute and a half or 2 minutes into the game. And so he tried doing the math. He said, okay, at this rate, it might have been 3 minutes. He said, at this rate, if they keep going like this, it's going to be 42-0. And he said, that sounds preposterous right now to say that, because no one's ever scored 42 goals in a game. But he said, at the time, with the utter dominance that they were displaying, that it was a possibility. And so, so in addition to their prowess on the ice, lots of guys would say that how underappreciated they were, in particular Nielsen, because as the linchpin of that line, his job was often to draw guys towards him and he wasn't the fastest of, he was the slowest of the three. So he took the brunt of the abuse, and lots of players would tell me how viciously they went out. They would admit to it. Viciously they went after them, slashing Ulf on the wrist, on the back of the knee, on the ankle, and he took it. And people would say how tough he was, and I'd say, "What do you mean he's tough? Ulf never fought." And they would say, "Tough isn't fighting. Tough is going through whatever's being thrown at you and never having it throw you off your game. You keep doing the same thing, and they can't stop you." And I never thought about Ulf like that. I never thought about toughness like that. But they said that Ulf Nilsson, 5'11", 185 pounds, was the toughest guy in hockey back then. And, you know, you think of Ulf as a skilled centerman, as a guy who could make seeing-eye passes, guy who would start using behind the net before Gretzky did. And you didn't really think of him as a tough guy. But he, with the guys who were going up against him, when he was going up against, you know, Gilles Bilodeau and Steve Drabano and all these guys who were 250 pounds and are just out there to seek and destroy, you know, Ulf was, he was something else.
The book is called The Hotline, How the Legendary Trio of Hull, Hedberg, and Nielsen Transformed Hockey and Led the Winnipeg Jets to Greatness. The author is Jeff Kerbison. Jeff, appreciate your time this afternoon. Thanks very much for joining us. 2 p.m. tomorrow at McNally Robinson for the book launch. Jeff, sounds like a terrific read. Look forward to grabbing my copy of it.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Our pleasure, Jeff. Take care. Let's head to break. When we come back, one final segment and an interesting tweet about Andre Pavlik. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, one final segment this Saturday afternoon here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. A ton of people in Winnipeg have purchased tickets to see Deborah DiGiovanni all weekend at Rumors, completely sold out. She was been in town, a fantastic comedian, sold out the entire weekend, so no chance to see Deborah at this point, but a very special Sunday evening performance at Rumors tomorrow night. That Canadian guy, Glenn Foster, in town. One night only, a special Sunday performance at Rumors. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. And of course, still to come next week, John Doerr is going to be in town, a concert series event. Get your tickets at rumorscomedyclub.com. I promised you an interesting tweet. This comes from Dennis Bernstein of the fourth period. We have the guys, Dennis Pagnotta of the fourth period. Pardon me, David Pagnotta of the fourth period on regularly on the program. Here's Dennis Bernstein, his tweet from 24 minutes ago. Though Jeff Zatkoff is not at fault for the LA Kings' two losses, sources say the LA Kings have made an inquiry on Winnipeg Jets goaltender, now Manitoba Moose goaltender, Andre Pavlik, hashtag kicking tires. He's just saying an inquiry, not sure where it's going to go, if anywhere. But there are apparently, according to Dennis Bernstein, the LA Kings in contact with the Winnipeg Jets regarding Andre Pavlik.
We'll get Dave Mnookin here, but as far as I'm concerned, I believe Andre Pavlik is starting for the Manitoba Moose tonight in Des Moines. So he is still a member of the Manitoba Moose. But this tweet is very interesting, guys, because we talked about it last segment. The LA Kings could be without Jonathan Quick for several months, and I'm sure Gary and Huss are going to talk about it coming up here with, on Hustler and Lawless coming up in about 5 minutes' time. So very interesting. Andre Pavlik might not be a member of the Jets organization for very long if this has any truth to it.
Well, go ahead, Dave.
No, I was just going to say it's interesting when Pavlik was doing his first interviews with the Moose after he'd been sent down and he'd cleared waivers, someone asked towards the end of the interview, you know, did you wish you got claim. It was kind of interesting because
he said yes.
He said, you know, and he wants to play for an NHL team. Obviously, who doesn't want to play? I mean, he's getting his NHL salary regardless, but he'd obviously rather play with an NHL team and have an opportunity. I'm not saying he's going to make a very strong case to play in the NHL past this year, but he would like that opportunity. So, I mean, I guess if you're LA and you're willing to take a flyer on Andre Pavlik, then maybe you're willing to take a flyer on Andre Pavlik. And if the Jets say Andre Pavlik wasn't in our long-term or even short-term future, then maybe they try and, you know, just dump that salary.
And Dennis, we should mention, Dennis tweeted this right after his original tweet. He's saying this was just an inquiry.
Sure. It's, so, I mean, it's an initial phone call.
Yeah, we don't know where this is going. As far as we're concerned now, all it is, Drew, as you just said, it's just a phone call. So, I mean, it could happen, it could not happen.
And I think what the important takeaway from it is that, you know, NHL teams, if they run into goaltending issues, injury like the LA Kings have suffered, I mean, you know, whatever it might be, NHL teams are well aware, of course, that the Winnipeg Jets do have a goaltender with their AHL team right now that has played a significant NHL experience. You can argue whether or not he's a starting goaltender for on a long-term basis in the NHL, but if you need a guy to come in and maybe to shore things up or provide some stability, if you don't think that you have it in-house, teams are going to have some interest in Andre Pavlik currently with the Manitoba Moose.
Right, and I think Andre Pavlik, guys, I know we've seen him quite a bit here in Winnipeg for 5 years, and you could definitely argue that Andre Pavlik isn't as good as Connor Hellebuck or Michael Hutchinson, and I would argue that as well, by the way, but I still think Andre Pavlik can play in this league, and I'm not saying that he's going to be one of the best goalies in the league, but certainly it shows you if the LA Kings are making a phone call to Kevin Cheveldayoff about Andre Pavlik, it means that there is some interest, albeit it might be, you know, a small amount of interest in Andre Pavlik. Teams you know, are looking at him.
I think that was the right decision by the Jets to move on from Andre Pavlik. I think it had run its course. You know, it was time for a fresh blood in the Winnipeg Jets net, so I understand certainly why the Winnipeg Jets made the decision to go with Hutchinson and Hellebuck as the goaltending tandem. Of course, Hutchinson in net for the Jets tonight as they play their first road game of the season in Minnesota, in St. Paul against the Wild. That game time 6 p.m. live here on TSN 1290. So I think it's the right decision, but it is still, you know, he's a diminished asset, but he still is, you know, got some interest for among other NHL teams who might need a guy either in a backup role or to fill in as an injury replacement or some. He's not going to be a world beater. He's not going to be a Vezina Trophy candidate, but he is a fringe NHL goaltender, probably an NHL backup, and there'd be interest in Andre Pavlik.
Right, and we should mention, Drew, that because the LA Kings are right up against the salary cap, they might be looking for the Jets to eat up a portion of that salary.
Certainly.
Andre Pavlik makes just under $4 million a year, or his cap hit is just under $4 million a year. He makes less when he's playing in the American Hockey League as far as what it counts against the cap, but certainly the LA Kings might be looking for the Jets to eat up as much as half of that salary.
Yeah, certainly. So something to keep your eye on. We will, of course, keep you abreast of everything going on with regard to Andre Pavlik. The Winnipeg Jets, as I mentioned, in action against the Wild tonight. Anything in specific you're looking for from the Jets in their first road game tonight against the Minnesota Wild? From my perspective, they need to, and this is going to be difficult, but they would need to shore up their defensive shortcomings that we saw Thursday night against the Carolina Hurricanes. Might not expose them as much against the Wild because they're not an offensive juggernaut, but the Jets, you know, for long-term success in the course of this NHL season, need to be a better defensive team if they have it within them, and there's some question about that, if they have it in them, than they were Thursday night.
Yeah, guys, and that starts with the pairing of Josh Morrissey and Dustin Byfuglien. They may go up against the Eric Staal, Charlie Coyle, Zach Parise line, so they've got to be more structured defensively, Drew. That's what I'm looking at.
Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. A big thank you to our guests, author Jeff Kerbison. We were joined by Joe Haggerty from CSNNewEngland.com, former Winnipeg Jets 1.0 player Mike Eagles joined us, as well as Dane Mizutani of the St. Paul Pioneer Press. In case you missed any of it, it's available for download on iTunes and on TSN1290.ca and on our website, IllegalCurve.com. Follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve. Again, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And all the latest Jets and Moose news on IllegalCurve.com. Big props to producer Rory. Big props to producer Alex. Big props to producer Remus. Big props to Dave Manoop. Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Stay tuned for Hustler and Lawless here on TSN 1290.